see if you can get sound.
Hello, everyone. Give a little wave. Ah, that's encouraging. I can see some of you there. It's lovely to be with you, if not in person. It's a bit of deja vu, this, I think, really, from a year or so ago. Only this time, it's only me that's in a little box, and you're there together in person. But I've been saying for a while that it's only a matter of time before every single one of us tests positive for COVID. And this morning, it's my turn. But let me assure you that after probably a few days of feeling like I've got minor cold symptoms, really, I'm not probably that surprised to have tested positive, but I'm grateful for the vaccinations that mean that what I have is probably not nearly as serious as it might be. So thanks for Lynn carrying on leading worship unflappably, for Paul making this possible, for Jeff stepping into communion, and anyone else who's doing anything, really. Peter sorting out techie stuff at the back, I think. So it's really good that it can happen. This morning's theme is Daring to Ask and Gideon's Prayer. Let me just read to you again. And it was a very long reading from Judges chapter 6, but thanks to Jane for reading it. And it's important, I think, to get that story. And I encourage you to maybe read it more slowly at home later on and move on into chapter 7 as well, because there's a lot in that. But we read at the beginning of Judges chapter 6, well, we read the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and then for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. I wonder what that resonates with for you at this time in particular. When I went away just over a week ago now, I had a framework for a sermon, but had no idea how things were likely to unfold in the week that went by. And in many ways, they have continued much as they did during the previous weeks. But as I read those words again, I cannot help thinking of another situation 1,000 or so miles to the east of us right now, because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves. Except these shelters are being prepared by Ukraine, perhaps in cellars, in basements, in all sorts of different places, as they try to protect themselves from the oppressive power that is being meted out by Putin. The only thing that does not resonate from those opening words of the chapter is where it says the Israelites did evil, because as far as I can see, there is nothing that the people of the Ukraine have done that deserves what is coming in their direction. How does that relate to the theme of daring to ask? When I was preparing the sermon, I was thinking of a fictional character who dared to ask. Dared to ask, "Please, sir, can I have some more?" That, of course, is Oliver Twist, as you probably know. Probably the world's most famous orphan, excepting possibly nowadays Harry Potter. After finishing his gruel, he did as he had to do. He's still hungry. He went up to the master and said, "Please, sir, I want some more." He dared to ask. But moving from fiction to fact, history speaks of many who have dared to ask. You will have different examples. Just very quickly, I thought of a few. Someone like William Wilberforce dared to ask, "Why can there not be an end to the slave trade?" The founders of trade unionism asked, "Why can't workers have rights?" The suffragettes asked, "Why can't women have the vote?" Nelson Mandela asked, "Why can't apartheid come to an end?" President Zelensky is asking right now, "Why can't we resist the might of Russia. Now, almost certainly, all of these groups and people will have asked first, why are things as they are? You need to do that, I think, to get to the point where you ask, why can't things change? And such, really, was Gideon. Gideon was one who lived in the period of the judges of Israel, before the monarchy, before they first had a king in Saul. He grew up during Deborah's time as a judge, when Israel knew at least some peace in the land. Then, we're told, the Israelites did evil, and he gave them into the hand of the Midianites. And crops were ruined, cattle were killed. Cattle was destroyed by the Midianites as a show of their strength. And eventually Israel cries out to the Lord for help, and a prophet comes to them saying, you knew I am the Lord your God, but you have not listened to me. God listened to them, and his angel appeared to Gideon and said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Now, this prompts in Gideon questions, perhaps more questions than answers. Gideon dares to question God. Firstly, he says, why? If the Lord is with us, why has this happened to us? And it's a valid question, isn't it? The question we will often ask is, why do bad things happen to good people? The complaint of Jeremiah in Jeremiah 12, verse 1 is, you're always righteous, O Lord, when I bring a case before you, yet I would speak with you about your justice. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? And I think we should dare to ask God, to question God. It's how we learn and grow and renew our belief in him. And yet we should prepare to hear the answer that comes back to us. Bad things also happen to bad people. They happen to people who ignore God. And he may use such things to get us back on track. The question may also be not just why does this happen to us, but why not? Why would it not happen to us if we accept that it happens to other people, sometimes for no apparent reason? Then a second question that Gideon asks is where? Where are all the wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? And I wonder what is the equivalent of those wonders of God for us. I mean, possibly it could just be simply the glory days of the church, the things that it seems we always remember from 20, 30, 40 years ago, when things were so much better, when perhaps we saw more life in the church, maybe conveniently brushing over things that weren't quite so good at that time. Where are all the wonders, though, we can ask? And it may be easy to lose heart. But the answer that comes back from the Lord to Gideon is, in some ways, not really an answer, but an emphasis on the resources that God provides. Because he says, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? We need to use what God gives us and maybe let God worry about the wonders. And that, of course, prompts us to ask, how might God be sending us at this time? How might he be sending us as people who can meet some of the immense needs that are in our world at this time, not least in the fast-developing refugee situation coming out of Ukraine? Prompts another question in Gideon, though, this answer, which is how? How can I save Israel, says Gideon? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh. I am the least in my family. But time and again, God uses the weak to bring his salvation. We might think of Joseph, the boastful dreamer who was sold into slavery, ultimately in Egypt. or Moses, the murderer who runs away, or Rahab, the foreign woman of dubious repute who saves men of Israel from capture in Jericho, or David, the humble shepherd boy who defeats Goliath. And David and Goliath has been one that's been much used in the news recently, thinking of the Ukraine and Russia. And we need to remember who won, don't we, in that scenario. And in the New Testament times, there's Peter, the coward, who denied the Lord and ran away. And then there is Gideon here. He says, how can I do anything at all? How can this be? And the answer comes back to Gideon again. The Lord will be with you. And actually, what more do we need than the Lord with us when it comes down to it? So Gideon's prayer is perhaps not prayer in the conventional sense, but it's a conversation with God. It's a teasing out of what is actually happening in his world and how he can make a difference. And God speaks into that situation and helps lead Gideon on. So Gideon dares to question God, and I think we should do that. But Gideon also dares to obey God's command. One wonders initially, did Gideon realize that he was speaking with the Lord? Well, if not, he soon did. He asked time to bring an offering before the visitor, the angelic figure that came before him with these words. He prepared goat's meat, broth and bread, and placed it on a rock. And it was consumed by fire in such a way that he could not deny that something was happening. Having realized that this was the Lord at work, Gideon was ready to receive a command. A command that required some daring to obey. Because the command that came was, tear down your father's altar to Baal, the pagan god Baal, and his Asherah pole, part of the objects of worship for Baal. Then build a proper altar to the Lord your God. It wasn't an easy command because it involved going against what his own family and his own people believed in. To destroy, really, the site of worship to the pagan god of Canaan and the consort of that pagan god of Canaan, Asherah. So Gideon, ultimately, though, obeyed. He obeyed, it has to be said initially, with fear of his family. He destroyed it at night, so no one else saw him doing it. But at least he did it. And he obeyed out of fear, out of reverence for this God that he had met. He did do it. And through doing those things, Gideon showed that he was ready for God's next big task. It's a reminder that it's step by step, very often, that God leads us. We're not always ready, are we, when God calls? But God doesn't stop nudging us forward in his purposes. He doesn't stop leading us onwards to do what he has for us to do. If we put it in a New Testament perspective, we might be reminded of the parable of the talents, where to the servants that do as God requires and take and invest what he's given to them, he says, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in handling this small amount. So now I will give you many more responsibilities. One step at a time, God leads us on. So having dared to obey God's command, Gideon actually isn't quite ready to move on, is he? Because he dares also to test God's will. He's starting to believe, I think, Gideon, that he can do what God really wants if God is with him. He starts believing that he can be the instrument by whom God saves Israel. Perhaps we can be like Gideon in that regard. Perhaps God is speaking to me, speaking to you. often do we believe that we cannot do something, but God has a way of getting us ready to do what he has for us to do. Don't know about you, but in my household, Wendy and I have been discussing for a couple of weeks, really, what could we do to help with the immense need that there is for the people of Ukraine. And yes, we can give. We can, each one of us, give money according to our needs, but it seems so inadequate, doesn't it? And we can pray, and that's a good thing to do, and be a part of wider prayer meetings. Great thing to do, but still, I know it's adequate, but somehow it doesn't seem enough. And we've been asking ourselves, well, here we are, living in a house with four bedrooms where it's only the two of us most of the time these days, and we just occupy the one bedroom, excepting that I think my wife's going to leave me in my COVID state tonight and go in the spare room. But what could we do? We have this space. Can we be a part of the short-term answer to the need for accommodation, maybe for a family of Ukrainians? I'm sure some of you are asking that same question. What is it that we can do? And I encourage you to pray into that situation, to look at what's coming out from the government at the moment. I believe there's a website that's meant to go live tomorrow by which we could sign up to bring our offers of help. I forget the name of the organisation now, but there is a Christian, thank you, Wendy's piping up from my side, but Christian organisation set up by Krish Kandai, who is quite a well-known figure, is a government advisor these days, was actually in a congregation at Haddenham come Dinton Baptist Church where I was preaching a few months ago online on Zoom. So he is leading a response through an organization called Sanctuary. Have a look at his organization online and see what possibilities there are for you to help. Maybe you just need to test God's will in this and see if you can be part of the solution. And then finally, daring to trust God. This is what Gideon did. Jane had a very long reading to bring to us there. I was trying to lip read her because the sound was off for me. You were getting some horrible echoes, I think. But she was probably grateful I didn't ask her to read on into chapter 7. But in chapter 7, we get to the place where Gideon continues to test God. He has, of course, laid his fleeces before the Lord. That comes at the end of chapter 6. But the test comes when he actually trusts God, doesn't it? And goes into battle against the Midianites. And he dares to trust God despite the strength of the opposition. Some didn't go with him. Some turned back, we're told in that chapter. And that only left Gideon with 10,000 men against the might of the Midianites. But remarkably, that was too many for God. God wanted to prove that God was God with less than that so that no one could doubt it. And through a process of elimination that you can read about in chapter 7, it was reduced down to just 300. Gideon dared to trust God despite the odds. It really was a hopeless scenario when you compare the strength of the opposition to the weakness of Israel. Gideon dared to trust God despite the risk. It's pertinent to remember that many Christians have been martyred because they have trusted God. And it's said that during the 20th century, more Christians were martyred than in total than in the previous 19 centuries. It continues to happen in the 21st century. There is a risk, but we know that we have a hope that outweighs the risk. And Gideon dares to trust God because he knows now that God can do it. God can bring victory against overwhelming odds, that nothing is impossible with God. So I want to finish by saying, what is God daring you to do? What's he daring you to do? What's he daring you to do in the context of the world as it is right now? Is he challenging you to do something for the people of Ukraine? Not everyone will be able to take Simon into their homes, but everyone can do something. How can we just sit back and do nothing when we see the immense need that is out there? What would we like others to do for us if we were the ones who were forced to become refugees? We can question God, sure, but having questioned him, we should be willing to obey his command. We can test God's will, and we should do that. But also, we should dare to trust him. So I want to lead us in a short prayer. Hope this has been okay for you. I have no idea what you've been hearing that end. But having led you in a short prayer, I'll hand back to Lynn to lead us through to the close of the service. So Heavenly Father, may we be people like Gideon. We may feel inadequate like Gideon. We may feel that we don't have the resources, that we have very little to offer to you that could make any difference to the people of Ukraine, any difference to the many other needs that surround us. But Lord, may we be willing to question you, to ask why things are happening in the way that they are. May we be willing to hear your answer and know that you're with us. Lord, may we listen for your word of command and know what it is that you would have us do. Lord, may we dare also to trust you, because you are a God who is always trustworthy, always faithful, always there for us.